Hello and welcome to the very first episode of Not Another Safety Talk. I am your host, David Taylor, and I'm here with my very bestest colleague friend, Simon Edmund.
Thanks, David. It's good to be here with you today. I'm looking forward to having a chat through health and safety in a different way and hopefully bringing something to the people out there, share a bit of insight.
Indeed, indeed. And as being health and safety professionals, we know that the first rule on the health and safety professional is not to tell people that we're health and safety professionals.
Absolutely.
Reason being is that we're not everyone's favourite cup of tea, which is understandable.
Yeah, there's nothing that turns people off at a dinner party or a party or something than telling somebody you work in health and safety. Doesn't set an exciting tone, does it?
Yes. So people always ask, how did you get into health and safety? So what's your story?
So like most people, I didn't go into health and safety thinking I was going to go into health and safety. So, you know, I started out thinking I was going to go into science, go into biology, ended up finding myself going into environmental health as a food inspector. That then led into health and safety and consultancy, moved through to a bit of a management position, and now I'm now fire team manager for Citation. So very much a natural progression through.
So you've naturally progressed through jobs where people naturally don't like you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You're right, as a food inspector, as an EHO, yeah, people are friendly to your face, but I think it's the same situation. The good news then is I could say to people I was a food inspector, if people ask what I did. It's a bit easier as a conversation than a work in health and safety. They go straight back to friends and say, are you the guy that closes the restaurants down? Yeah.
That's me.
Yeah. So how did you get into health and safety?
Well, I actually started out in engineering. So I was one of those people who used to start putting my hard hat and safety glasses and stuff on when we were told that the health and safety person was coming in. So
yeah.
I'd done that for 10 years. And then naturally, as I say, there were health and safety people coming in, and I just had a thought process is that I would potentially like to go and try it out. I mean, I came from the environment where people were still going to the pub and stuff like that at lunchtime, and then came back and working heavy machinery. So I used that opportunity to go and put myself through health and safety. I did ask the company if they'd put me through it, and they said no. So I had to give up the job and go back to uni and go on. So yeah, that's ultimately how I ended up in it.
Sounds like you made the right decision there.
It does. It does. And I don't have a lot of friends anyway, so it doesn't really bother me that much that people don't like me doing the job. So Simon, what is the purpose of this podcast? What are we trying to get at?
So we know health and safety has a reputation. You know, it's not everyone's favourite thing. It's often seen as a burden for businesses. Health and safety can be seen as a bit of a black and white clipboard thing, just slowing people down. But that's a perception that we want to break. Health and safety these days, especially for people like us that have the passion around it, is really about moving away from that. You know, we don't want to be transactional. We don't want to be just going in and causing problems. What we're there to do is save lives, ultimately. You know, stop people getting serious injuries, stop people going home in a worse condition than when they went to work. You know, we all at Citation believe that should be a fundamental right. You should always go home healthy. And so we want to bring a bit of that. You know, we want to show what health and safety is, give a bit of us, a bit of our culture, and bring some insights, some updates to help bring health and safety to life, and ultimately show people why it's worth engaging with. If you get the right people involved, health and safety can be a very, very positive thing.
Yeah, indeed. One of the things that I'm actually really proud of is that there is a study out there, and they believe since the Health and Safety at Work Act came in, is that there has been 14,000 lives that have been saved. And I mean, I like numbers, I like to look into things. So there is also a study that it says that we as individuals know roughly about 150 people. Mm-hmm. So if you look at the amount in lives that have been saved, and then you look at how many people they know, that would work out to about 2.1 million people who haven't had to go through that loss. Wow. You know, so that is something that we're really proud of and why we do it. But also, as you see here as well, is that we believe that we've got a great culture within our health, safety and fire team. and citation, and it's something that we want to invite people in to see, you know, and show how ultimately we like to work with people, and we're not there to chuck the book at them and tell them what they need to do. You know, the people we work with are the people that know the best within what they're doing and are skilled, so we work alongside them to then make sure that they're compliant and ultimately that they keep people safe and everyone goes home.
Absolutely. I mean, that's an interesting stat, because one of the challenges with health and safety is if you're doing health and safety well, you don't always know about it, because you know when you're doing it wrong.
Yeah.
Someone's injured, someone's hurt, someone goes home with a health condition. If you're doing it right, nothing happens. So it can be sometimes really hard to actually evidence that your health and safety is doing great. Obviously, there's the absence of accidents, but it's hard to measure. So hearing some stats like that is actually quite interesting. But you're absolutely right. That's what we're about. We really want people to get home healthy. We're not about the trivial. You know, sometimes health and safety gets drawn into really trivial stuff, and it can feel like a lot of bother for no good reason. But the real benefit of health and safety is where people could be seriously injured. And I mean, you're probably the same, but how many times have you seen serious accidents or fatalities even where it's come back to, I wish I'd done that at the time?
Yeah.
I mean, the one that always sticks with me is, I think in the last couple of years, there was a fatality where someone got pulled into a machine. And they found on investigation, the guard only needed one bolt. That one bolt would have held the guard in place and would have saved the guy's life. That bolt cost a couple of pounds. So afterwards, they said that guy's life was worth a couple of pounds.
Yeah.
And it's tragic. And that's the kind of stuff that we want to avoid. We want to see that, help our clients to identify that before it happens and prevent other people being in that situation where they're looking back in hindsight and wishing they'd done something sooner.
Yeah, and unfortunately, we obviously over the years we've seen that the fatality rates and stuff that they have come down, you know, but we're still we still see a plateau just now where I think last year was 124 people unfortunately lost their life, and the thing from us as well is remembering is that you're dealing with people.
Yes.
You know, and so you can have all the best health and safety and in place to make sure that like you're compliant and that you've got everything in place for your staff and so on.
Yep.
But we're still dealing with people. Like,
absolutely.
Accidents will happen. And in those circumstances, it's then that if it's investigated, it's about you being able to obviously put that information forward to show
absolutely
what you've got in place to ultimately highlight that you have done everything, you know, and it doesn't put the business at risk.
Yeah. I think that's key. The whole principle of health and safety is you're constantly learning.
Mm.
You know, businesses change, procedures change, what you do as a company changes. And so you have to constantly adapt with health and safety. And you're right, it is about people. You can have the best procedures in the world, but you know, there is a human factor involved that often gets overlooked. It's something we're really keen to bring in when we're seeing clients and having that conversation is, you might be technically compliant, but is your health and safety culture good?
Yeah.
You know, are you considering the things that could make that process go wrong? And that's where we bring insight. You know, that's where we do try and help.
And that's a huge thing for us as culture. Mm. It's massive for us in Citation, our culture and how we work. But as well as that, when we're looking at safety, a massive thing can be actually the safety culture within our clients. And that's ultimately what we're trying to achieve.
Absolutely. We don't want to be a transactional business. Health and safety can be in that sphere sometimes of, yeah, we go in, we do a tick box, we give them that, that's the end of it. We try and be a bit more transformational. So we like to go in, provide that insight, but then give the follow-on support. I know you're proud of your advice team.
Yeah.
Dealing with tens of thousands of bits of advice every year to support clients through those pain points. And our field team on health, safety and fire, we have consultancy. So we get out and we see them. You know, it's not just about that initial inspection. It's about the wraparound support we can give when people need it. So, David, health and safety is changing all the time. HSE are always looking at new things. There's new priorities coming in and it can be hard for people to keep up. So we want to bring people that sort of information this year. Can you give us an overview of the kind of things that we're going to be talking about and looking at?
Yeah, of course. So when you consider health and safety, there is a feeling out there that we have got very good at safety.
Yeah.
And that there was a moving focus to health.
Definitely.
This was actually around about 2020, we were seeing that there was obviously a major focus going into the health side of health and safety. So obviously we had COVID that obviously came along and stopped that train ultimately of where they were looking at with health. So we believe really this year is that there is going to be a real focus and on the health aspect. So looking at stress within the workplace, that's something that we believe will be huge
Definitely. This
year, and that all workplaces will need to have a stress risk assessment in place. We also believe in looking at sort of like your COSH.
Yep.
You know, so substances is hazardous to health. You know, again, it fits into the impact on people's health. So we believe that that's going to be a real focus area and somewhere that our clients and ourselves as safety professionals should be focusing in on to make sure that we can give people the right guidance.
Definitely.
What about yourself with regards to fire?
So fire is very interesting times. So obviously we're nearly a decade on from Grenfell. And we're now starting to see changes coming through. So end of last year, we had the competency framework come out, a new British standard that talks about what a competent fire risk assessor is.
All right.
And based on the risk of the premises, you need to be able to demonstrate different levels of competency.
Yep.
Not something we've had before. So it's a really good bit of progress, but it does mean it's shaking up the fire industry. So going into this year, one of the key things we're looking at and we're constantly giving the message out is you need to make sure, A, you've got a fire risk assessment. Every commercial occupied premises needs a fire risk assessment, but that needs to be done by a competent person. So the days of your cheap fire risk assessment from someone around the corner are gone. Everybody should be looking at, is it a competent person that's done that fire risk assessment to a really good standard? So that's certainly a big shift that's going to be coming throughout this year and into the future. And then we've got some other more specific things. So in residential buildings, there's now a change for residential PEEPs that's come out. So anyone who can struggle in an emergency to get out now needs a plan in place. It's very different legislation, not something that we've seen before. And so there's things there that are going to affect people. So we'll definitely be looking at that. So obviously one of the other things, David, there's a few buzzwords going around at the moment.
Indeed. Indeed. Yeah. And I do apologize that we will mention AI. It does seem to be everywhere. And it's being used everywhere, which is really good, obviously, and can help us in our workplace and be efficient and make life easier, ultimately.
Yeah, definitely.
But what we're seeing with it now is that near the end of last year, it was mentioned by enforcement authorities with regards to managing the risk.
Yes.
To using AI in the workplace. So we do believe that this is something that as health and safety professionals and obviously in the workplace that you're going to need to be looking to consider.
Yeah.
You're going to need to look at how you use AI throughout the work and even looking at how your employees and stuff like that will use it as well and how you mitigate those risks. So a big thing for us this year is that we will look at AI and we will continue to do these series of podcasts throughout the year, and we'll go into these topics in much more depth. AI is something that we believe will be huge. And then the other thing that we think that will be really important for people to be aware of is the Building Safety Act.
Absolutely.
So again, this picks up on yourself and talking about Grenfell, and that's ultimately where the Building Safety Act has come from. And there has been changes recently, and it's actually to the building regs that puts new requirements on people to know their roles and responsibilities and their competencies. This will put a lot more pressure on all sort of contractors, we are going to cover this in a lot of detail, but this is something that people need to be aware of.
And we're seeing that come through for accreditations as well, aren't we?
Yeah.
It is certainly becoming a big challenge for businesses. So we'll hopefully bring some information and insight that will help people get through that and keep their business flowing.
Yeah. So Simon, since I'm a nice guy, I thought that we would introduce this part of the podcast where I would give you three cases.
Okay.
Two of them are true.
Sure.
And one of them is false.
Okay.
So I want you to tell me what's true. And what one's false.
Okay.
So I've got it here.
Let's give it a go.
I have wrote it down so that I don't make a fool of myself, and I want to make a fool of you here when you get it wrong.
Sounds like it.
So case one. The company was fined £2,700 after workers were put at risk from poor metalwork and fluid on CNC machines.
Okay.
Okay. Case two. A company and a director was prosecuted and fined after failing to comply with multiple HSE enforcement notices.
Okay.
They were fined £8,100, the company, and the director was fined nearly £12,000.
Okay.
And then case three is a company was fined after failing to manage its hand-arm vibration risk of its employees. So all three cases are prosecutions.
Ooh, okay.
What do you think is true and what do you think is potentially a lie?
So one of them's a lie. My instinct is the first one's a lie.
Okay.
And the reason for that is because I feel like that fine is quite low. Because metalworking fluids is nasty, nasty stuff. And I've seen prosecutions go through for that kind of thing at more around the 30 grand mark.
Yeah.
So I'm going to lock in. I think that the first one was a lie.
So I think that I was being sneaky here.
Oh, no. Okay.
You are correct. You are correct.
Okay.
It was roughly about £27,500 fine. So they were all actual prosecutions. I just altered the fines.
Got you. Very good. I mean, they make sense.
Yeah.
We do see prosecutions go through for directors as well. Yeah. And like the vibration, we see prosecutions go through when no one's been harmed. Yeah. See a lot more of that on health now.
Again, that feeds into obviously what we had seen in the past of where people wouldn't necessarily consider vibration, air, noise, but the focus has changed, and that's we've seen that with prosecutions now, you know.
I mean, it's hard to see, isn't it? It's very easy to see if someone's going to get hit by a truck.
Yeah.
It's hard to understand that the substance they're breathing in that you can't see, can't smell, whatever it may be, is actually doing them long-term harm. So that makes a lot of sense, but I am going to get you back next time.
No, the way that this runs is that I will come with the true and the false. I was just being nice this time round.
I'll bring you some fire ones one time.
Yeah.
We'll see how it goes then.
I'll be sick that day.
So, David, as the advice team manager, you obviously see a lot of the data that we hold, including enforcements. We see a lot coming through from clients. We see a lot coming through from other sources. What sort of stuff are we seeing at the moment? What are the sort of the big topics from enforcements?
So I think if we look back into last year, where we look at the data, COSH was a huge area of focus when it comes to enforcement. So it's around about 35% of all enforcements last year was COSH related.
Wow, is that high?
Which is massive.
Yeah.
You know, so it just sort of highlights the fact as well of that it's maybe not been an area where there's been focus.
Definitely.
From businesses and so on to make sure they've got the right controls in place.
Yeah.
But it highlights that actually the HSE are focusing in on the health side, you know, because COSH obviously relates to hazardous substances, to health. So that was a huge thing that we've seen last year. The other ones that we've seen was garden, you know. So we see a lot of enforcements for garden, which is understandable, you know.
It is, isn't it? I mean, gardening, if you get it wrong, you've got serious accidents.
Yeah.
Very serious accidents. And it's easy to spot. So you'd expect to see that, I guess.
Yeah. And it's unfortunate, like, from my background in engineering, I've seen some bad accidents relating to garden, you know. So that was number two that we seen last year. And then the third one is an obvious one, is working at height. You know, working at height is one of the biggest risks in workplaces. It is one of the biggest causes of fatalities in workplaces. So, anytime that the enforcement authorities come on site and they see anything or they look at your working at height, you know, they're going to, 9 times out of 10, they issue a prohibition notice, which means that you need to stop, obviously, what you're doing there and then in that activity, and you can't continue it until you rectify. So, those were our top three enforcements last year.
Got you. I mean, working from height, we see it all the time, don't we? Even driving down the road,
yeah,
see somebody doing a bit of roof work without scaffolding or protection in place. It's hard to turn the health and safety off at that point, isn't it?
It is. And you know, the thing being with enforcements is that it can have a big impact on businesses. You know, the type of fines that can come from fee for intervention.
Yeah.
You know, so they'll charge you an hourly rate of £183 per hour, but that isn't the time that they're on site. That is the time that they spend on your case.
Yeah.
So if they do anything where they're researching, where they're sending emails, where they're doing anything, it adds up quite quickly.
Absolutely.
That's why obviously getting it right is really important. And again, yeah, from our side of things and dealing with it, is that's where the team come in, is that we obviously will help our clients to tick it off and be compliant as quickly as possible, because then again, yes, that brings down that fine, you know, of the overall interaction.
And with those recent interventions, it only has to be a material breach, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So if they walk on site and they see anything,
yes,
that is a breach, fee for intervention starts.
Yeah.
And you know, from personal experience, I haven't seen one that's come in at less than £2,000. You know, it's always upwards of £2,000. And if it gets really complicated, like they have to bring a specialist in to come and re-examine something,
yeah,
it really, really racks up.
Yeah, and as you can see from the regards to talking about prosecution, you know, you can be prosecuted for not complying the enforcement notices. You know, so it's really good for us to know and be able to see the data and provide that information to highlight where we need to be focusing in on to make sure we're compliant.
Absolutely. So it's good to be proactive, isn't it?
Indeed.
And you know, what we often say is you might need to have a specialist bit of safety work done, specialist assessment or something. It's going to cost a bit of money.
Yeah.
But if you don't have it done and the HSC walk in, and they do walk in, you've got to pay the fee for intervention and still pay for the thing that you didn't pay for before on top.
Exactly.
So it all adds up, and it really does. It pays to be proactive in health and safety and get everything done before that happens and avoid the enforcement action.
Indeed. So obviously, Simon, with regards to fire, you know, it's such a large topic.
Yeah.
If you were having people obviously watch or listen to this today, what would be the one thing or a couple of things that you would like them to take away in regards to fire?
Sure. So I'd say the big one is don't underestimate the importance of a really good fire risk assessment. Unfortunately, we've seen some really, really big tragedies around the world recently, last few months, and they're in circumstances that very well could have happened in the UK. We're also seeing fire risk fire officers, taking a lot of enforcement action if they believe a fire risk assessment isn't suitable and sufficient.
Yeah.
So for both of those reasons, if your fire risk assessment doesn't cut it, if it's a tick box exercise, if it's been done, you know, quick or rushed or by someone who's not competent, it can really leave you in bother. You know, you may get away with it. There may be nothing that comes of it, but you could very easily have an enforcement officer visit and feel the pain of that. Mm-hmm. Worst case scenario, you might have a massive fire, even a small fire. The risk to life is huge.
Yeah.
So my one takeaway today would be to urge people to rethink their fire risk assessment. Is it a solid fire risk assessment? Is it helping to prevent fire? Do they know how to react if there is a fire? Are they confident that if they have a fire today, because it can happen?
Well, I was going to say, it's like no matter what type of business or what you do, it is one of the biggest risks that everyone will have is fire.
Absolutely. You could put everything in place to make it look, you know, to reduce the risk as much as you possibly can. But there might be an electrical fault. You know, it could be something as simple as that. Someone brings in a charger that's not functioning correctly and overheats and catches fire. It's the things that happen that are unexpected that can often be the starter of a serious fire. So you have to be ready.
Someone has a birthday, brings in a birthday cake, candles.
Absolutely. You're bringing fire into a building.
Mm-hmm.
You bring fire into a building, something else might catch fire and spread. And you know, you're starting with a risk there.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and I think a lot of that comes back to, as I say, you have to have a solid fire risk assessment. If you start with that, if you get your fire risk assessment really, really good from a competent person, you're off to a really good start. So from a health and safety point of view, what would be your, I guess, the key takeaways for people listening or watching today?
So if I had my own business,
Yeah.
And I was starting off, and I know that health and safety can be daunting. I would start off and look at what is the highest risk activities that goes on within your business and start there, the stuff that sure. can kill people. And I would focus in those areas
yeah.
to then make sure that I've got the right things in place to prevent that. Because the one thing for me as a health and safety professional, and I go in and visit any client, is I always want to make sure that I feel confident in myself when I leave that place, that I have given them all the information, that they have the right tools or understanding to prevent fatalities. And at the end of the day, that is, as a health and safety professional, that's what I want. But I think as if you obviously run a business or just people in general, obviously, as you alluded to, is we want people to go home safely. So
absolutely,
that's where I would start. And then you can start to work your way down.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Okay, Simon. So we know that health and safety gets blamed for a lot.
Sure does.
And what we're called the anti-fun police, is that I think some people like to call that. So there is a lot of myths out there, and we've seen why things have been cancelled and not alleged. So I want to do this part of the pod where
yep.
you break down a health and safety myth that is out there.
Great. I've got a really good one for this week. I've been scouring the internet. I found a really good one. We're heading into spring. And what I found was in the past, there's a council that has banned the planting of daffodils in green space on the basis that they're toxic if eaten.
Ah.
Right. This is definitely one of those health and safety myths. Health and safety is not going to stop you planting daffodils.
Yeah.
That feels just cruel.
I was going to say, they're all over schools, they're everywhere, so absolutely. We'd have an issue.
Absolutely. If the problem's that people are eating daffodils, that's a different problem.
Yeah.
That's not health and safety. But yeah, health and safety gets blamed for things like this. I think it's an easy scapegoat,
yeah,
but it does give us a bad name.
So we're comfortable that we're not going to be going and advising clients that they can't be planting daffodils, and we're not going
definitely
to be...
Definitely not. Definitely not. As we go into spring, plant the bulbs. Plant the flowers, get everything looking nice and fresh and clean for the New Year's. Absolutely. Absolutely. We don't want to be making the world any more miserable.
We do get blamed for things not to happen. And hopefully what we'll look to do over this series is that we will go through all the myths and we will bust them so that we can change the perception that we are actually the fun police and not the anti-fun police.
Definitely. I think we can find some good ones. Yeah. So David, we said earlier, being a health and safety professional, sometimes not the most fun job title, and doesn't always set the right impression when you meet someone. So can you give me a time where you've had to dodge your job title?
So I actually had one really recently. Okay. So we have moved house, and my wife's best friend's dad is a joiner.
Sure.
So he came round to the house to do some work for us, and he was chatting away of some of the stuff he was doing, and he moved on to health and safety officers and how they're such a pain. And in that moment, it was very awkward, and I chose not to tell him that I was a health and safety professional. I just nodded and smiled and sort of agreed with him. So it happens a lot.
Yeah.
It's very uneasy to turn around to people and tell them that you're a health and safety professional. What about yourself? Any sort of job titles that you've gave out there?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the one time I find it's either useful or not is if you're having a haircut, right? A bit niche, but when you're having a haircut and someone asks you, oh, what do you do? It depends if you want conversation with your hairdresser, with your barber. If you're having a good chat, you make something up.
Yeah.
Manage a team of professionals or something.
Yeah.
But if it's one of those days where you really just want to sit there in silence, it's, yeah, I work in health and safety.
You're not scared that they might give you a bad haircut because they don't like health
maybe.
And safety people?
Maybe. And what was good in the past when I was in the EHO doing food inspections, as I say, I could say I work in enforcement.
Yeah.
Gives a different impression.
Yeah.
Sounds like something that might be quite cool. Or say I'm a food inspector. And then people say, oh, cool, yeah, what does that mean? That was very easy, much harder when you get into health and safety.
Yeah, yeah, we just tend not to tell people.
Find
like,
something out.
I might be like a dolphin trainer or something like that, but
absolutely.
Not health and safety.
Absolutely, yeah. So thanks for watching or listening today. I hope you've taken something away from our conversation today. We're going to have a lot more in the future. We're going to bring you new insights, new conversations, and hopefully, as I say, this will give you a bit of an insight into health and safety, break down that barrier. We can show a bit of who we are and what we do as a profession, but also as a business and the team. So thanks for joining. We'll see you soon.